Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
And I'm joined by Aaron Fishman. He's a sports writer in the Los Angeles area, and he is out with a brand new book. It is called A Baseball Gaijin, Chasing a Dream to Japan and Back. The book is available everywhere, and it's about Tony Barnett, who I remember a little bit when he had a short stint with the Chicago Cubs, but Aaron's book's a lot more in-depth than that description. And so, Aaron, first of all, start with the word gaijin. People see that in a title, and I had to look at it a couple times, and I wondered if it was gaijin, how to pronounce it. But obviously, Tony Barnett went to Japan and back. And what is a gaijin in Japan?
Gaijin is slang for foreigner or outside helper, and historically it's had a little bit of a negative connotation, but it has over time been seen as by the gaijin themselves as more of a neutral term. That it is what it is. They're one of four active foreigners at the most on any top level NPB roster in Japan, and so because there are so few spots, the expectations are sky high, and if you're not performing up to standards, then they'll replace you with a different gaijin. And that's what happened with Tony his very first year there, when it seemed like it was going to be just a failed one-year experiment before he ended up getting that second chance in Japan.
Well, Tony grew up like a lot of us did. I grew up in the 80s and wanted to be Ryan Sandberg and wanted to play for the Chicago Cubs one year and or one day. He grew up wanting, his dream was to play Major League Baseball, so he doesn't really get that chance. He kind of muddles around in the Diamondbacks organization and ends up going to Japan, which is kind of the opposite of what usually happens. But as you think about baseball in Japan, I don't think a lot of Americans are familiar with it, other than the big stars that have come over, and certainly Shohei Ohtani these days. But what's the baseball culture like in Japan compared to the Major League Baseball that we all know in America?
They love baseball so much there. There are a lot of different things I could talk about. One of them is just the atmosphere in the crowd. It's wild. I liken it a little bit to European football environment, where it's just their bands, there's choreographed dances, basically customized for each batter. There's chants customized to each batter. There's a different custom depending on which stadium you're in. For instance, the Yakult Swallows, Tony's team in Tokyo, their fans raise and lower mini umbrellas every time their team scores a run, and they also do that in the middle of the seventh. They love their team, and it's just such a funny thing if you think about the dichotomy between the stereotypical buttoned up professional persona in Japan, and a lot of these people who are coming to games and are diehard fans. You wouldn't even recognize them a couple hours before the game, compared to how they're acting and what they're wearing and just all the different shenanigans that go on during the game. And then they go home, and then they're right back to their buttoned up persona. It's just it allows something of a release where you just can let all of your real world concerns go and just immerse yourself just in what's happening with this team that you love and that you live and die for.
What I loved about Tony's story is he kind of went, like I said, the opposite way. He left the United States Major League Baseball to go play in Japan, but as he's over there, he ended up making more cash than I thought one would make playing baseball in Japan. What was the money situation like? And you know, he's making, I think he signed a $3-some million contract for a couple of years toward the end there. So does that type of money go as far as in Japan as it does in the United States?
That's an interesting question. I don't know exactly. It was a 2-year, $3.2 million contract that he signed, and this was after his 2012 season, where he was a dominant closer, and then unfortunately he got injured in 2013 and 2014. So that delayed his attempt to finally get that major league debut, which ultimately happened at 32 after he was finally healthy again in 2015 and was even more dominant. But he made a lot of money. The first year, he got a $500 one-year contract, which nowadays doesn't really sound like a lot. It's a lot to everyday people like you and I, but now with the money that's being thrown around both in Japan and the United States, that's not that much. But to a guy who was at the most in AAA and he was getting like $21,000 a year, $2,100 per month. And it was just, he was just not making much at all. So it was seen as just such a big payday for him. But then ultimately he did take a slight pay cut to sign with the Rangers. Then he didn't do too bad for himself. He got a 2-year, $3.5 million contract eventually. It definitely was a life-changing contract for him, that 2-year deal in Japan. And nowadays, Gaijin can make even more. And he wasn't even the highest paid at the time. You definitely can make a good amount of money. And I think it probably does go about as far as it would in the U.S., but of course it depends also which city you're living in the U.S. In Tokyo, though, things aren't cheap.
I'm chatting with Aaron Fishman about his brand new book, A Baseball Gaijin, Chasing a Dream to Japan and Back. The book is available everywhere. One of the things that I appreciated in this book, Aaron, is you addressed the situation with Tony Barnett's interpreter. And I think he even admits he didn't use the interpreter as much as he should have because he kind of wanted to figure out the culture and the language himself. But there was a scene where he's in the shower and there's an earthquake and a teammate's trying to tell him about it and they don't understand each other. Of as far as what the other one is saying. So when you have his interpreter that he used over there, what was that relationship like as Tony tried to ingratiate himself into the Japanese culture?
They became like more than friends. They consider each other family. And Go Fujisawa, the interpreter you mentioned, was his interpreter for 5 of the 6 seasons that he was playing in Japan. And they were exactly the same age. Go's first year as a full-time interpreter with Tony's first year in Japan. So they grew together, and they made mistakes and learned from them together, and they had a lot of similar interests. They liked the same type of rock music. And so they were really close. And it was more that first year of just kind of like, as you alluded to, a prideful man in his mid-20s, just wanting to figure out things for himself. He didn't want to impose upon Go's personal life. Go had a girlfriend and then wife and had his own things off the field. But as Go would always say in over the course of our conversation, he's available 24/7. That's part of the job description. So if Tony wanted and needed him away from the field when they weren't with each other, Tony would have been fully within his rights to do that. And as they got closer, Tony became more comfortable reaching out to Go when he needed help. But he was still also very respectful of Go's personal life and his time away from the team. So it was one of those things where it was a balance that Tony had to navigate. But then naturally also over the course of his time in Japan, he didn't need the interpreter nearly as much. And he never became fluent in Japanese or even close, but pretty quickly he was able to know enough basic terms to get by pretty comfortably without an interpreter always by his side.
Another part of this story is fulfilling somebody's dream. And as you said, he made some good money in Japan, and he could have stayed there and probably made more, but he always wanted to play in the MLB, so he finally got his chance with the Texas Rangers and eventually his career ending at Wrigley Field in Chicago. But when you look at the trajectory, it was just by happenstance, wasn't it, that you got a hold of Tony Barnett very, very early on in his minor league career, right?
Yeah, exactly. I reached out to him in Double A, and at that point, his story wasn't that interesting at all. It was pretty indistinguishable from any other minor league pitcher. He logged a lot of innings, had a good K-to-walk ratio. I then started interviewing him and spoke with him and learned quickly how charismatic and engaging he was. But his story didn't become really fascinating to me until he first went to Japan. Then already in the spring before year two in Japan was when he experienced the earthquake and tsunami. He was in Yokohama at the time, and he ended up blogging about it for our small independent sports website, now defunct, within days of that event. And so that was a really special thing to be able to read. But even at that point, after four more years in Japan, as fascinating as I thought his story was, and how many amazing anecdotes and things that he could share with readers, I didn't think it would be marketable in the U.S., so I didn't ask him to turn it into a book until he got that contract with the Rangers, because then I thought only then would a publisher in North America be interested, and luckily he enthusiastically agreed, and the rest is history. But I was personally always fascinated by his story, just how much he struggled in Japan, both on and off the field early on, the friends that he made, the lessons that he learned, how he changed as a person and became much more composed on the mound when things started to go south. It's a cliche, but I really think it's true that he became a man over the course of those 6 years. He was 26 when he left, but he'll admit he was immature. He was erratic. He was overly emotional. He wasn't a family. He didn't have his own family at the time. He was a single man, pretty selfish. And I can relate to that. Just changed him. It transformed him.
So not only is this an inspiring story on the sports level, but from a journalistic level, you create these relationships early on in your journalistic career, and then it pays off in the form of a book several years later that you never anticipated. The book is a baseball gaijin, Chasing a Dream to Japan and Back by Aaron Fishman. The book's available everywhere. There's some great stories in there, especially one about when Tony hit one of the most famous players in baseball at the time, Alexander Pujols, Albert Pujols with a beamed him when he was playing for the Los Angeles Angels. So check that out. It's full of information. Aaron, just a fascinating book, fascinating story, and I thank you for putting it together and joining me today.
This was really cool, Brian. Thanks. Such a pleasure.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakalskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.